Welcome to the Net Zero Investor Podcast, where we discuss how investors tackle climate change, the biggest issue of the 21st century. My name is Mona Dolan. I'm the editor of Net Zero Investor. Today, we want to take a closer look at oil prices, the outlooks for earnings in the oil and gas sector, and what it tells us about the medium-term profitability of fossil fuels. Because we've got this interesting trend where organizations like OPEC are kind of pitching for an increased output of oil and gas, and that's also what we're seeing in the US administration. But underlying company is actually adopting a slightly more cautious stance and appearing to be less keen on producing more because the oil price seems to be falling. So what does that all mean for institutional investors and how should we position ourselves for the energy transition in this context? So with us today, we've got Rohan Bohwater, who's co-founder and lead analyst oil and gas at Axela Research. Rohan's based in Melbourne and Axela is an investor advisory group focused on the climate transition. Thanks for joining us today, Rohan.
Thanks for having me, Mona.
So it's an interesting time to discuss the profitability of oil and gas. We've obviously got earnings season as well as the AGMs for a lot of big energy companies at the moment. And a lot of these big oil and gas firms have just announced their results. Is there a general trend that stands out for you in that?
Yeah. So despite the Aussie accent, I'll talk mainly about the Euro majors as they make up the core of our coverage and also where I think the big story is. So this quarter really marks the first real test of what we at Axela have defined as the great rebate. And that really revolves around companies rethinking transition and falling back on oil and gas. And this has been, you know, gradually playing out, but really it is the first set of results after the, you know, sweeping reversals we saw, and I suppose were made official in the full year results in capital markets updates earlier this year. So after years of transition dominating the headlines, we're now watching the sector openly revert back to hydrocarbons under the banner of financial discipline. So the big trend and story for us is the strategic divergence we're seeing. And this really surrounds the companies that are leaning into this reversal. So the BPs and Shells of the world who, if you might not have noticed, have quietly dropped their renewables disclosures. And this is the first time since 2020.
That's interesting. Yes, it is. This backtracking on renewables under the guise of enhancing profitability, but the real pressure on profitability is in a way coming also from lower oil prices. We've had quite a profitable time for oil and gas companies with the outbreak of the Ukraine war, in theory, right?
Yes, so we've come off, you know, a really profitable period after the surge in oil and gas prices post the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And the reaction to that we're really seeing play out now. So these reversals have been framed as financial discipline, maximizing shareholder returns. And as I alluded to, dropping these renewables disclosures really tells you everything. It's not about being a leader in transition now. It's a sharp pivot back to, you know, core hydrocarbons, providing unambiguous clarity. You know, we are firmly focused on generating value in the short term by maximizing cash, giving it back to shareholders. And right now, that involves pursuing oil and gas, you know, so that's great for returns now. The trade-off is clear, rising long-term risk, really mortgaging the ability to capture value in an inevitably shifting energy system in exchange for that short-term security and distributions. And the numbers tell the story. This quarter, we saw earnings fall about a third year-on-year. On an underlying basis, it was down 25%. And what did we see? Distributions, flat. Low-carbon capex has really taken the hit here, cut 34% year-on-year. So cut what doesn't deliver in the short term and maximize cash.
Okay, because that is the investor pressure. If we're taking a step back, the general macroeconomic environment that these firms operate in, we obviously got the trade wars going on, and that's putting pressure on costs and profit margins. And what you're suggesting here is that they're adopting a short-termist view in a way, because they have that pressure from investors to return cash. I think a good example here is probably Elliott taking a stake in BP and kind of pushing them in that direction, right?
Yeah, exactly. And really, we've been seeing this kind of gradually play out. It's really, we're seeing the green light for companies to really lean into this strategy. So, you know, entering a more challenging macroeconomic environment, But really, the playbook is unchanged from last year, and that's to protect distributions at all costs. So last year, we saw payout ratios climb to almost 50%. That's up from about the 30s only 2 years beforehand. And again, transition spend was down 6% year on year last year, set to fall another 21% this year based on their guidance. So it's, you know, let's be clear, it's not organic growth they're pursuing. They're, you know, mortgaging their future and ability to transition to fund dividends. Works for now, great, but burns your future optionality.
Another example here is Shell, which has kind of taken a strategy what we've seen across a few firms where they're focusing really on increasing LNG production as kind of a supposed transition fuel in a bid to diversify their income streams. Is this an alternative, or are there some risks that should be considered when doing that, focusing on LNG?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So we saw a swathe of LNG deals from Shell last year, and this quarter they completed one of those, the Pavilion deal in Singapore, which, you know, secures a 6.5 million ton portfolio to really contribute to their, you know, big ambitions. So right now they have the biggest LNG portfolio among their peers and the biggest ambitions at around 88 million tons per annum by 2030. And the idea here is to, you know, optimize spreads across different markets. Essentially, Shell is betting big on LNG, but this, you know, is contingent on what seems to be an impossible balance. So lots of diverging analysis suggesting different demand profiles going forward. Shell's very bullish on LNG. Business model depends on balancing the idea that emerging markets are going to be the key driver of demand. They'll need low LNG prices, especially to compete against the falling prices of renewable. But at the same time, they'll need to sustain relatively high prices to fund their projects, to sustain their dividends and their buybacks. And, you know, worse still for, and this really relates to the net zero investor, LNG, it's, you know, a long cycle, capital intensive across the board, especially for Shell. It's being ramped up to 2030. This is going to lock in emissions for a long time. So if a Shell is telling you that they aim to be net zero by 2050, they're ramping up their LNG portfolio, which is going to have assets living for decades. In the short term, you know, great, less emissions intensive than oil, but intrinsically there is an amount of carbon in there that is going to be a flaw to their emissions, unless, you know, you employ things like carbon capture and storage, which is, you know, still very nascent. Definitely a real risk there for emissions, and also the idea of, you know, stranded assets.
Absolutely. And also, I think their outlook on LNG differs a lot from what, for example, the International Energy Agency says, because they're predicting that demand will actually peak in this decade, so before 2030. So if you're ramping up output now, you might not actually, by the time you're ready to kind of take this to the market, you might not actually get the demand that you're hoping for, right?
That's exactly right.
So what could this do? I mean, mainstream economical thinking is you've got oversupply, you've got a decline in demand, so we'll see a drop in LNG prices.
That's definitely sort of, if I put on my economics hat, the rational thinking. You know, we see a lot of kind of diverging opinions in this area, but I think, you know, if we think about the risk, the downside risk that is there, and to commit to such a massive portfolio that's going to extend through to the 2030s, 2040s, you know, you're betting big on LNG in a world where prices of renewables are falling, the uptake is increasing, and policy is going to shift more and more to supporting renewables over fossil fuels.
You mentioned CapEx before. CapEx, obviously, the way companies are investing in different business departments, and you alluded to the fact that to kind of return cash to shareholders, companies have stripped back on investment in renewables and kind of focusing, ramping up the investments in existing fossil fuel assets, which they perceive to be the safer ones. So CapEx is, I guess, one of the key indicators investors can look at when they're looking at the longer term trend of how a company positions itself.
Certainly. In order to scale and build a profitable, low carbon transition offering that's going to, you know, capture the market growth that'll inevitably come in these markets, you need to invest. And, you know, what we're seeing, especially from BP cutting CapEx guidance by 75% in low carbon at their Capital Markets Day, also Shell, really it's being framed as capital discipline. Do what you know, do what you do well. What we're seeing is, well, in fact, this is a strategic failure. We see this as a strategic failure. It's a failure to scale profitably. And I think the exception to the rule really demonstrates this quite well, or really paints the story quite well, and that's Total Energies. If you look at Shell and BP, they've really taken a big step back from renewables. BP specifically has cut CapEx 75% at their last Capital Markets Day. The market is looking at them, looking at these investments, saying they're not profitable, and they might be right. But then if we, you know, look at a company such as Total Energies, somehow they've managed to build an operational capacity in renewables that is more than all of their peers combined. They're consistently showing, you know, profitability in their integrated power segments, and they're not being punished by the market in the way that Shell and BP have. They've maintained, you know, a pretty stable level of capital expenditure dedicated towards their low carbon offering. So what's going on here? Really, it comes down to Total having a strategy that they are executing on, they're being firm on. They started early, all the way back in 2015, and they've been smart about it. So during these last, you know, 4 to 5 years where Shell and BP have been chasing scale for scale's sake in renewables, Total has taken a very strategic approach, and that involves operating across the entire value chain instead of just chasing generation. That involves pairing your renewable generating assets with dispatchable power. That opens up different revenue streams such as grid balancing and capacity contracts. And because they've achieved this scale, when the political uncertainty pops up in somewhere like the US, Total can turn around and say, we're going to halt investment for 4 years and focus on these other areas, while Shell and BP have essentially had to abandon their plans and throw out the baby with the bathwater, if you'll excuse the crude euphemism.
You see more of a longer-term view there, I'm reading between the lines, with Total.
Definitely.
Okay. Another way of looking at this is obviously fixed income and debt levels. It's quite interesting to see how these companies, like big fossil fuel companies, obviously getting a lot of their financing from bond markets. We've seen kind of a trend of companies increasing the duration of the debt that they issue. What do you think fixed income investors in major energy companies should consider when they're allocating to bonds like that?
From Accela's view, we're really looking at what this debt is funding. So we're seeing heavy spend going into these long-dated upstream and LNG projects, just as, you know, the transition momentum builds and we're seeing demand continually grow within the renewables sector. Our warning really is that there may be too much focus on this sort of short-term yield, not enough on the, you know, structural energy shifts. And as some firms have flagged, they might go to, you know, debt to sustain these buybacks. Is this really a sustainable strategy? So that's what we would consider.
I think one of the things we talked about earlier, just Elliott's stake in BP, which is often kind of cited as that traditional conflict between investors with a short-term interest, and maybe some of our listeners might be more on the long-term investor side, like pension funds, insurers, and have liabilities that date back for many, many more years. What do you think is an investor like Elliott trying to get out of BP, and how realistic is it?
Elliott, it's clear they see value in simplification. Push out renewables, cut costs, increase distributions, increase cash. We at Accela really disagree with this framing. We don't think the spend in transition and investment in the long term is a cost. For those who scale it right, like we're seeing with Total, it's delivering, you know, asymmetric long-term value. They're consistently posting returns above 10%, aiming for 12%. Our advice would be to not surrender to short-termism, and the ability to make yourself resilient in transition is absolutely worth paying for, not just from a returns point of view, but also from an emissions point of view.
Interesting. And what we've seen, I mean, we've just had a BP AGM. We've had quite a big investor vote against the chair of BP, which is presumably has been slightly symbolic because he announced that he's going to resign anyway. But do you think BP will take this on board and maybe change its strategy?
The large protest vote against the BP chair, you know, was it a protest against climate? Was it a protest against strategy? Will they take it on board? We think it was a combination from both sides. Yet to see how BP will react, but we don't think it was just a climate protest. We think it was a frustration with an incoherent plan. So from Elliott's perspective, it's really stop pretending you can scale transition. And from a climate conscious investor, it's either, you know, fully commit, show us your vision, or get out, essentially. So what we really see here is that the market is demanding clarity and credible delivery. You can't really sort of toe the line forever. The real issue is in poor execution. So everyone, including I think the activist investors, would want scalable low carbon earnings and a good view of capturing that low carbon value.
Interesting. So both sides are kind of unhappy with the credibility of the transition strategy, albeit from very different perspectives.
Yes, certainly a symptom of towing the line.
Let's go back to the bigger picture and oil and gas majors entering this more challenging period. Just to wrap up the discussion that we've just had, what can investors do, do you think? I mean, I know you can't give specific investment advice, but strategically in terms of engagement and stewardship, what do they need to think about in a way to protect equity and bond holdings and ensure that their portfolios are well prepared for the energy transition?
So Mona, I think you already said it, and our view is firmly engaged. The energy transition will be messy. It's inevitable, but we must, as investors, push companies to balance this new strategy of distributions with credible, scalable transition reinvestment. If you want to be a going concern well into the transition, buying time with buybacks will only work for so long, and the companies walking away from transition will become untenable when the cycle inevitably turns. Investors must engage with these companies, focus on structural change, clear strategies, going for progress, not going for perfection, and the next 12 months will be decisive. You know, Elliott has shown that investors can wield a lot of power. Those, you know, climate conscious investors need to galvanize, have a consistent message. It needs to be informed in the data. It needs to be actionable and pragmatic.
Really interesting. Thank you so much for sharing that insight, Rohan. That's been super interesting.
Thanks for your time, Mona.
Great. And to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. It's given you some food for thought. If you want to discuss these things in more detail in person, we've got a couple of events coming up. So we've got on the 12th of June, we've got a charities and endowments events in London. Then we have on the 16th of September, we've got a Net Zero Investor Real Estate Summit also in London. And then if you really want to make it to the big event, it's the 21st of October annual conference. I hope I'll see lots of you there. Also, that's happening in London. So thanks so much for listening in, and I hope you make sure to like and subscribe to us and share it on social media, and I'll speak to you soon.